Welcome to the Bitcoin Infinity Academy, brought to you by the Plan B Network and Bitbox. This is our course on my second book, Bitcoin Independence Reimagined. And I'm Knut Svanholm. I'm here, as always, with Luke DeWolf. How are you today, Luke?
Good morning, Knut. I'm doing very well, thank you. The episode today is called Power to the People, so let's see what that looks like. We're going to be in the same geography again fairly soon. That's always fun. So yeah, looking forward to this episode and looking forward to the shenanigans we get up to in the next few weeks.
Yeah, there's some conferences and stuff coming up.
Very good. Yeah, and before we get started, just a reminder that if you'd like to get involved with the Academy, the best way to do that is via our Geyser page. Go to geyser.fund/project/infinity for all the details. You can join the Academy group, watch the shows live if you like, and even get a full set of Knut's books to enjoy through our lovely show there. So again, that's geyser.fund/project/infinity. And shall we just dive in, Knut?
Yes, let's unpack power to the people.
Perfect. Power to the people. Under a fiat currency monetary system, multinational corporations and big governments are hopelessly intertwined and inevitably help fuel each other's agendas. Policies such as safety regulations and standardizations may have been implemented by politicians with the best of intentions, but what inexorably happens when lobbyists advance their agenda is that laws and regulations set the bar for entry into the market at heights unreachable for smaller companies. Entire markets get monopolized by multinational behemoths because of centralized governance models. One example of this bureaucratic cancer is the General Data Protection Regulation, GDPR. The new set of rules governing how companies must store their employees' and clients' personal data in the EU. To comply, smaller companies will have to allocate a larger portion of their total revenue than bigger companies, giving them a competitive disadvantage in the process. Giant media outlets will also likely benefit from Article 11 and Article 13, a copyright directive that will open the door to censorship of YouTubers and other content creators. The outdated copyright laws of the 20th century are being shoehorned into the realm of the internet, where they were never supposed to be in the first place. Traditional copyright laws are obsolete and dysfunctional and will not protect the starving artist at all. The only thing they do is empower the big media houses and Hollywood studios. Okay, so the heavy-handedness of regulation.
Yeah, and also the fact that the only thing that can create actual monopolies is market interventions. If the market is truly free, then there's always room for a competitor to provide a competing service or good with a better price. And even if that company is started with just the intention of being bought up by the bigger behemoth, it still provides price competition and it's good for the consumer. So this is sort of hinting at that deeper catalactic insight that monopolies are always the result of market interventions.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the examples listed are very good ones. And I mean, the EU, there's a saying that the US innovates, China duplicates, and the EU regulates. Maybe the order is different, but yeah, it's why the EU really just isn't competitive anymore. They regulate competition out of existence. Ironically enough, they basically have the same types of protections that they're getting mad at Trump for putting tariffs on. It's all the same nonsense, like certain brand names being protected to a certain region or whatever it is. Like recently in the news, they're saying that they're going to pass a law that says you can't label veggie meat as it is so-called as meat. And the funny thing about that specific example is that, well, yeah, it's not meat, but who cares what you market something as? It's still slop that isn't fit to feed to your dog. So, but regardless of what it's marketed as, that's not going to change anything. And the other one, of course, is this chat control regulation, which is very dangerous and probably impossible to implement. And so we might lose all of these secure chat apps because they simply exit the EU and refuse to let EU numbers in the future.
But chat control isn't happening. It's just last week, Germany decided to vote no to that, which means that they don't have a majority in the EU Council. So they will, well, of course, they just postpone it and introduce it again. That's what happened last time they tried to implement it. But at least it stopped for the time being, which is great news for everyone on Earth.
As topical as this might end up being, we'll see how accurate this is in another few months or years or whatever it is. But the overlying point is the EU really loves its regulation, and I think it does way more harm than good.
Absolutely. And also, this is alluding to another thing here about the 20th century in general. Copyright laws and patent laws are sort of a product of the 20th century, because the 20th century is really the anomaly, if you zoom out a bit on a historical timeline. Because before the 20th century, you couldn't really make money off of making copies of intellectual stuff. So, you know, a book was costly to produce. A movie couldn't be distributed. Music had to be experienced live. I mean, there weren't movies. There were theaters and plays, and you paid to see the play, you know. So it's only in the 20th century where you could, like, mass produce creative content and charge people for it. So now that we've entered the internet era and the 21st century, that's all obsolete, because information wants to be set free. Information wants to travel freely. So the cost of a movie or a CD or a book or something is just super small in comparison to what it was. And this is, and I think you can even first principles, deductive reasoning yourself, to prove that they are actually not constructive at all, these protective laws, which is one of the reasons that we're doing this, right? We're giving away all of my books for free. All of these chapters are published on Noster, if you didn't know that. So you can read all the books on Noster. They're open sourced completely now. And the Academy itself and us talking about them, I mean, you can see the page here for free on the internet. So we're leaning into that. We don't believe in intellectual property laws, do we, Luke?
No, definitely not. We do believe in value for value. And so if you do value that someone has created something and you get value out of it yourself, we appreciate that if you send some of that value back. But it's pointless and silly. Even if there is some idea that it would be nice if you come up with something that you get a theoretical monopoly on that thing, it's just not how the world works. So maybe stop trying to fight it.
No, there's a reason that Lars, the drummer from Metallica, got so hated when he went against Napster. What's that, like 15, 20 years ago now?
More than that, yeah.
I mean, the thing is, the internet has sort of proven that giving stuff away for free is actually more profitable to you, in the long run at least, because you need to get your content out there if you're going to live off of creating intellectual content. Putting up paywalls simply doesn't work anymore. So the free market is sort of is a stronger force than any interventionist attempt to hinder it. So I'm optimistic, as always, and hopeful that the free market does sort these things out. I mean, the basic premise here is that if I have some information and you copy that information, you didn't steal it from me, you copied it. So I still have it and you still have it. We both benefit from it. And that's a good thing for everyone in society. That is not the case with a thing. So if I give you this pen, I don't have it anymore. So human conflicts only arise out of fights over scarce resources. And intellectual things can only be artificially scarce. And that's what these laws do. They hinder information from traveling freely. And I think it's a net detriment to everyone on Earth.
Definitely agree. Shall we continue?
Absolutely.
You can vote for this or that party, but the truth is, as long as the control of the money supply remains centralized, there is nothing you can do to really influence the decisions of those with true power. All you can do is limit the ways in which they can control you. Bitcoin is a one-man revolution for every man, woman, and child on Earth. An individualist revolution is the most grassroots thing there is. But it does require people to actively participate rather than just complain about the state of things. This is a good thing. A lot of privacy tools are already available for those who want access to an escape tunnel now rather than later. Privacy-focused hardware such as Purism computers, privacy-focused web browsers, VPN tunnels, and the Tor project might all be somewhat flawed, but at least they're a step in the right direction. The revolution will not be centralized. Well, okay, that last sentence is a good summary here. The revolution will not be centralized.
Yeah, that's from an old article I wrote back in the day when I started this whole Bitcoin writing stuff. And I mean, today I'd probably say a Start 9 instead of a Purism computer. Other than that, I agree with all of these points still. The Christine Lagarde made the best ad for Bitcoin ever in my mind when she said that if there is an escape hatch, that escape hatch will be used. And yeah, she's right. We will use the escape hatch. We will not accept your clutches. Like, we will escape them.
Yes, definitely. And well, you know, all the tools mentioned, first of all, we got into this in quite a bit of detail in Inverse of Clown World, a little more detail and a little more up to date. But I think the important thing is just kind of be up to date on what you can do to take control of your own sovereignty, right? And it's a lot of fun putting these things together if you have the mind to do so. The little project I did over the last few days was getting my home heating miner from 21 Energy, getting that set up with Ocean and getting Lightning payments straight to my Start 9 node. And well, they started coming in, these little Lightning payments every time Ocean finds a block. And it's like, isn't that amazing? I've got a thing that's heating my house that is sending me Bitcoin every few hours. Like, that's amazing, right? Like, stuff like this exists. It's awesome.
No, absolutely. My often too, the heater you were talking about is being shipped right now. So I'm looking forward a lot to installing that and start mining. No, it's great. All of these tools are being built, and for the institutions, it's always going to be a game of whack-a-mole. They're going to try to hammer us down and stop us, but all that happens is that we grow more resilient. Like, we evolve like a virus that gets more resilient the more you try to kill it. So it's beautiful. The free market wins.
Yes, and also the free market provides. Like, all of these tools are put together by people who believe in this stuff, and either in jurisdictions that are more pro free speech and decentralization, or just as anonymous people. And actually, let's maybe get into the next paragraph where I think it'll touch on that more.
Yep.
Bitcoin by itself is only pseudonymous at best, but combined with some of the aforementioned tools, a bunch of hardware wallets, and a full node, anyone can take a giant leap towards self-sovereignty for a relatively small amount of money. Remember that even if the internet provides everyone on Earth with a plethora of opportunities as it is, if we want it to reach its full potential, we need to keep it decentralized. This can only be done by actively choosing not to use the default settings on most gadgets and by being vigilant when prompted about what we want to allow our phones, tablets, and computers to do. All right. I know exactly what you're about to talk about now, Knut.
You do?
I do.
Well, enlighten me then, Luke, because I don't really know what I'm supposed to talk about here.
Well, how about the dangers of using defaults and of keeping Bitcoin decentralized?
Oh, yeah. So if you upgrade to core version 30, don't use the default op return settings or data carrier size settings. I think that's what you're fishing for, right?
Yeah, that's what you were going to say. So how about you say it?
So now I said it. Don't upgrade to core 30.
Don't upgrade to core V30. Yes.
Well, we'll see how that plays out here in the coming week. I don't view it as I'm still optimistic. Bitcoin will survive even when they put up road bumps in the way. And I think this is going to be dead in the water. But we'll see what happens. Who knows? That is not a topic for the academy, though, I think. This is more about economics and about Bitcoin in general, not about the nuances of tech debates.
No, fair enough. But I think the overarching point that still holds is that Bitcoin needs to remain decentralized, and operating a full node needs to be something accessible, something that you can do.
Absolutely. And in order to do that, they need to be cheap. it can't be too costly to fire one up, as Ethereum has proved. Ethereum, for those who don't know, is a centralized shitcoin scam that started around 2017, I think, and it's dead now.
Well, well. Let's continue. The idea of absolute digital scarcity achieved through decentralization is not easily dismissed, not even for politicians and the Silicon Valley elite. Some of the more honest among them embrace the idea, like Senator Patrick McHenry of the 10th District of North Carolina, or Jack Dorsey, the CEO of Twitter. We'd better help these sorts of voices get heard if we want the mainstream to catch on. You don't have to be a virtue-signaling delusional psychopath to get somewhere in this world. There are more or less decentralized alternatives to Twitter, but as long as Jack's in charge, it certainly seems like one of the better social media platforms we have today. Footnote, after this book was written, Jack Dorsey stepped down as CEO of Twitter and started devoting much of his time and energy to Bitcoin-related projects, such as Nostr. True, all the big platforms have some form of censorship algorithm running, but remember that these networks are privately owned and entirely made up of people who voluntarily chose to join them. It's not really censorship if you have the choice to opt out. Censorship is only censorship when carried out by a government authority or another mafia-like entity, because it is only then that you're coerced into silence. A voluntary system doesn't count, even though a more pro-free speech attitude from the Facebooks and Googles of the world would probably be a good thing. Keep in mind how the Cantillon effect helped these conglomerates amass power, and that the ultimate tool for putting an end to their reign is in your hands already. Bitcoin fixes this. Yeah, so I have a lot to do with the social media landscape and free speech, some interesting topics here.
Yeah, and I don't remember that senator anymore. I haven't heard from him since, I think. I haven't followed him anyway. The thing is here that it's crucial to understand what censorship is, and that it's always a forceful thing. It's someone, there's a gun somewhere. There's a threat of violence somewhere. That is censorship. And even some Bitcoiners seem to be confused about the difference between censorship and filtering. Filtering is just you deciding what information you want to see. It's your voluntary choice. So me blocking a person on Twitter is not me censoring that person. It's just me not wanting to listen to whatever that person has to say. And of course, yes, this is the footnote there mentions Nostr. Nostr is a great, if not anything else, it's a great lifeboat to have if all your other social media things should fail or get co-opted or captured by politicians or whatever. There's always Nostr, which is much more unstoppable than the other ones, even though it's relatively small at the moment, so it doesn't have the network effects of the bigger ones. Another thing to mention here is the Cantillon effect and how that actually works. The thing is, the closer you are to the monetary spigot, the more you gain from whenever they choose to counterfeit money and print more of it. And in terms of these, how that benefits these internet giants and Silicon Valley giants is that they have access to cheaper loans, artificially cheaper loans. So the money printing can get you into this territory of even negative interest rates, which means that loans are so cheap that they're giving them out for free and even paying people to take them out. And this is very destructive and it's not natural at all. A negative interest rate couldn't exist in a free market because everyone has a positive time preference. No one wants things later rather than earlier. That is the universal principle of time preference. There is no one who prefers to get paid a year down the line rather than now. So all of this is artificial, and this is why these things are, why they can grow so enormously big and then get politically influential, because the system is in bed with itself. The politicization of money printing and of these things, that is what forms these monopolies and makes them so big. So the money printer is funneling wealth from the middle and the lower classes into the hands of the elite all the time. And people cheer for even more interventionism, not realizing that they're shooting themselves in the foot. The the opposite is the actual remedy, like removing politics from the equation altogether and removing the money printer more than anything.
Yeah, definitely. And as you mentioned, Noster is kind of the only one that's tackling that with any real effectiveness. Twitter has kind of, it's basically being captured by the right in my view at this point. And I mean, maybe some pendulum swinging in the opposite direction is always useful, but Twitter is a pretty rough place in general. I always open it and I just close it immediately. It's so toxic, and there's just something to that. I don't understand why it gets like that. Noster, by comparison, is pretty tame, although there have been some fairly heated arguments when people say stuff that is controversial anyway. So, and Noster is great. Noster is great. Like, I think it's a lot harder to get the same kind of reach or the same value out of Noster as many of the other social medias, depending on which one you're using. For Bitcoiners, that's probably mostly Twitter, but it's still good. It's still worth using. I think I've realized I just don't really have the mental energy to be putting myself out there on social media all the time. But when I do use social media, it's Noster. I don't always use social media, but when I do, it's Dosa Keys.
Yeah. I mean, the reason that Twitter is so full of arguments is because the algorithm thrives on attention and any type of attention. So when people get upset about stuff, they throw more attention at it. It's the attention economy playing out. I mean, the same was true for reality TV back in the day when that took off, like Survivor and whatever spin-offs of that. People are more prone to keep watching if they're upset than if they're happy with what they're watching. So I think that the same is true for these social media platforms. Like, they want people to be upset because that means they stay on the platform and argue back. And in a way, I mean, that's what I love about Twitter. Like, I want to point out that people are wrong on the internet. That's and write the word actually too many times. That's part of the fun, but I guess it's not for everyone, I guess.
No, it's definitely not for me. Should we continue?
Yeah.
Moving on. Every time you vote in a democratic election, you legitimize democracy. Most people in most democracies do this, even though all democracies are all flawed in more or less obvious ways. Every time you stack sats or acquire Bitcoin in whatever way you can, especially if you get paid in Bitcoin for a good or service, you promote yourself. By using Bitcoin, you vote for yourself and your personal independence. No matter what you think of the country you live in or democracy in general, I bet you wouldn't mind if the powers that be were a little less capable of patronizing you. We humans tend to think of ourselves as slightly more capable of deciding things for ourselves than our peers. With Bitcoin, we have a way of proving this to be true. Whether we're actually capable of handling our own private keys doesn't really matter to the system. Bitcoin will punish the reckless and compensate the attentive accordingly. It acts as the ultimate expression of equality of opportunity. And eventually, the Bitcoin economy will weed out those who weren't really mature enough to use it in the first place. This may sound harsh, but the truly, deeply evil thing that fiat currency does to people is arguably a lot worse. I certainly agree about that. Bitcoin requires responsibility.
Yeah, and it punishes / rewards people accordingly. And it's beautiful. That's what rules without rulers mean. That's how we can have a leaderless system, because the rules are set in stone. It's actually natural law materialized. It's equality towards the law, because the law is in the code. So you either abide by the rules or you're not in the network. You're not agreeing with the agreement that Bitcoin is. So yeah, it's a beautiful thing.
Yes, absolutely it is. The harshness of it all and the requirement that you take your own personal responsibility, and if you lose, you lose. That can be hard for some people who depend on daddy government or at least some kind of backup to be there, right? But it's just one of those paradigm shifts. And I think it's like what you talk about with Bitcoin just being a generational thing. People are just going to be used to the things that Bitcoin requires to use it, right? And there are custodial solutions, right? You can use your wallet of Satoshi, you can use your whatever if you want some ways of having a backup, but ultimately, once you send Bitcoin out somewhere, you can't get it back. That's the real truth of it. Although, again, there are some solutions to maybe make someone think you've sent a transaction, but then you can really claw it back later. But that's, again, we're getting technical and arcane. So,
yeah, I mean, delegating responsibility to a third party is always costly. It's just that Bitcoin points out the cost very clearly, because if that company goes bankrupt, there goes your paper Bitcoin. It was worth nothing. Like, and they can rug you. A bank where you store your fiat currency is much more devious, because they rug you all the time through the inflationary currency. Like, it's losing value over time. So regardless of whether they're good at keeping it or not, it's still losing value. So Bitcoin is a much harsher mistress, but it's a much more truthful mistress, I'd say. More wife material. So but still, everything in it is voluntary. It's your choice whether you want to outsource which amount of trust you want to give away to third parties. How much you want to trust the custodian, and how much you want to trust the hardware wallet or node software or whatever it is. It's all up to you. And doing your homework is always recommended here. And brushing your teeth.
All of the above. Should we continue?
Sure. Go ahead.
I think we'll actually finish off the chapter here. Social benefits and safety nets have deprived people of the ability to take responsibility for the consequences of their actions and learn from their mistakes, creating a generation of snowflakes and unicorns who unscrupulously claim victimhood whenever anything bad happens to them. Everything is always someone else's fault, it seems. The saddest part about this development is that it takes the focus of the general public away from the real problems of the world and shifts it towards more and more arbitrary matters. If you feel that you've been bereft of your childhood, maybe you should try growing up. Opting out of the current paradigm isn't easy, but it's easier than most people believe it to be. You don't have to choose one system or the other. Having just some Bitcoin is an insurance policy like no other, because it hedges against the entire system collapsing. As the global number of Bitcoin users grows, individual nations will have a harder and harder time controlling it or even taxing its users. Just as the children of today dismiss any of the obsolete arguments about anything from their parents' generation with the phrase, "Okay, boomer," so will the children of tomorrow dismiss concepts like banking hours or even inflation. They will have known about Bitcoin all their lives, and they will have taken notice of its behavior over the years compared to that of the fiat currencies. With the discovery of Bitcoin, the adoption clock started ticking, and the inevitable fall of the fiat currency era began. Yeah, so again, I think the generational thing, and also some interesting stuff about the two systems, that's been topical lately.
Yeah, I mean, an idea, nothing's more powerful than an idea whose time has come. And I don't know anyone who has been orange-pilled properly that have then been un-orange-pilled. Either you get it or you don't. I also don't know anyone who's against Bitcoin and can also explain how the difficulty adjustment algorithm works in detail. Once you do, there is no going back. It's just clicks and then you're on board. And I don't think anything stops this train, or nothing stops this train of thought. Is the phrase I'd like to use, I think. There's also quite a fun nod to Greta Thunberg here, being bereft of her childhood. This was when she was still protesting climate stuff and weren't, you know, sailing to Gaza. So, yeah, that certainly changed and didn't change over the years. It's kind of fun to read this in hindsight.
Yeah, it's funny. Yeah, things that change but don't change. Yeah. The victimhood complex definitely hasn't changed. And pulling people out of that, I think, is going to be quite difficult. But Bitcoin forces the responsibility, and that's a good thing, I think.
Yeah, it's funny how these lefties are, whatever problem they're pointing out, the solution is always more government and more government interventions. No matter what, if it's terrorism or the green agenda or immigration or whatever the problem is, in their view, the solution is always to give more money to the institutions, when the opposite is the actual solution.
Absolutely. Well, so yeah, this chapter, I think, was definitely all about how Bitcoin empowers the individual, but forces the individual to take responsibility. So very much a core theme of later books, especially Clown World.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as we've mentioned before, these earlier books are sort of idea embryos for what was to be fleshed out more thoroughly in Clown World and Praxeology, I'd say. And we've had a lot of fun re-editing them and rereading them and talking about all the ideas. The Academy will continue and we'll plow through all the books eventually. And I'm looking forward to every single paragraph here.
Likewise. And with that, I think that has been this episode. I think, shall we just say some few words about our partners, Plan B Network and Bitbox?
Yep, we shall. The Plan B Network is one of our main collaborators, and it's fantastic to work with them. I've been giving a couple of lectures on Praxeology over in Lugano, and also they brought me to El Salvador and stuff, so I'm looking forward to doing a lot of with them in the future. They're a great platform for Bitcoin education in general, both tech education and business education. You can check them out at planb.network and what they're doing all over the world, all of the hubs they have and all of the courses you can take online and how you can participate. It's a great, for the moment, centralized solution to decentralizing Bitcoin education.
Yes, Plan B is fantastic. Can't say enough good things about them. And then second is we've got Bitbox. They're our favorite hardware wallet, and they've just released the Bitbox 02 Nova Edition. The key things about this version of the Bitbox is that they now support iOS natively, so everyone can use it, no excuses. And they've just upgraded to the latest secure chip. So yeah, basically go to bitbox.swiss/infinity to check out the Bitbox 02 Nova. And get the Bitcoin-only firmware edition. Make sure about that.
Yes, we're only promoting that. We're not promoting any other firmware, just to be clear.
Just to be clear.
And also, come and see us in Lugano if this is released before that. I don't know. It should be, right?
We're Bulgaria. Going to Lugano.
Yeah, and Bulgaria. And use code Infinity whenever you're going to a conference. The chances are that you can get a discounted thing. But we're going to Lugano pretty soon, and we're going to do an episode on stage there. It's going to be great. The Plan B Forum in Lugano, I couldn't recommend it enough. It's a great conference.
Likewise. And yeah, just to confirm, what will happen is that we'll sort of take a break for a week from the regular programming, and we're going to stream an episode only on Rumble, which you might have heard is well, getting overtaken by Bitcoiners, something like that. And yeah, so we're going to be doing an episode with Giacomo Zucco and Mir Laponian and talking about everything going on at Plan B Network. So that's we can look forward to that one. And then we'll be back to our regularly scheduled episodes. So with that, this has been the Bitcoin Infinity Academy. Thank you for listening.
Bye-bye.